I'll always love you.
Speak and say the words that no one else will ever say. Love, love like the world we know is over in a day. I'm gonna show before.
Welcome everyone to Xenon Uber's podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 83. This podcast shows for all the Xenon Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So, welcome everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. Me, myself, and I. it's an ongoing saga. As everyone that has been listening is aware of, that I have been fraught with injuries. And, needless to say, I still continue. I have since found out that I've pulled a muscle in my left hamstring and gluteus maximus muscle, which is your butt muscle. So it's literally a pain in the ass. And to top it off, I went and played 18 holes of golf and walked the golf course. Not smart. And then to add insult to injury, as one of my listeners, Vanessa, turns around and says, you know, I'm the Black Knight out of Monty Python's movie, The Holy Grail, where the knight gets cut with so many wounds and stuff. Merely a flesh wound. Because on Saturday morning, though, albeit I could barely move, I went outside with my wife and helped finish putting the pavers in our boathouse, in our boat shed, and laying them and sorting them out and putting sand down so the ants wouldn't create another tunnel in an escape from Alcatraz. And, so I've pretty much, that's it. I've been relegated by my physio and my massage therapist and several other physios that if I ever want to see the light of day again, I am not to do anything. Which, that in itself is quite a feat. So, I have not been able to train now for, that was last week and this week, so this is week two. I have not been able to run or train for 2 weeks. And I'm ready to go a little bit stir crazy. I really, really had gotten into the habit of either getting up really super early on the weekends and going for my run, or coming home, waiting till it cools off around 4:30 and going for my run. And actually, my wife even got into it too, because she'd get on the bike and follow me, and she'd go for a 4 mile bike ride, because that's what I was up to, 4 miles. And she actually got quite enjoying of it, because she's actually listening to her iPhone and taking this course that they offer on, I guess, iTunes, free courses that you can listen to and learn a different language and shit like that. But, so we actually, it was quite enjoyable, but I can't do that now. So, I'm just a little bit nuts. Besides the average nuts, that is. And it's in that you know, that those of you who are listening and stuff, that we find out that we have a thread of commonality, not just in the injuries, mind you, because, I mean, obviously not too many of you out there, which I pray to God none of you do, have had a back injury where you require back surgery and stuff. But, you know, where you've injured yourself and you're coming off injuries. One of them, you know, one of my listeners has turned around and pulled a groin muscle while she was doing her Taekwondo classes. Another one of my listeners decided that she was going to try and see how much of a bionic woman she was, or Wonder Woman, and lift garage doors up and pull muscles, even though she's got a condition and she shouldn't have been doing that. And, you know, so there's a thread of commonality. I've had other people who have had car accidents and who shouldn't be doing things, but so, you know, we as women are, we call ourselves the most non-stubborn of the two species, but we are quite stubborn women, and we'll turn around and say, ah, nah, I can do that, I can take care of that. And not. We pay the price, and God, we're the biggest babies, I gotta be honest with you. You know, as much as we whine and take in this, look, my physio has done something to me that she hasn't been able to do in over 2 years. She got me to the point of tears. And that says a lot, because I've got a very high pain threshold. I mean, for goodness sakes, 11 years living with a back injury from an elevator accident. And then, I mean, I've had a truck fall on my leg and crush my leg. And I've had, oh, you know, slices of fingers and things like that. And you know, yeah, you shed a little bit of tear and pain. And you just sit there, that hurts. And that's it. But, yeah, it's just quite amazing that you can go through that. And then there's also the issue of commonality in our relationships. I mean, we all have exes, and we all have done stupid things in our lives, or we've gone, whoops, shouldn't have said that. Or, uh-oh, you know, and you can see one ex is meeting the other ex, and you just close your eyes and wait for the dust to settle afterwards. But, you know, it's nice to know that there are people out there who suffer just alongside me. Those of you who know who you are, even my running buddy up in Laura in the UK, who, you know, she's pulled the hamstring and she hasn't been able to run, she can fully appreciate the magnitude of what we are going through. And can I just say one thing? It's got to get better, girls. It really does. And guys, because I do have a few boy listeners, it's just got to get better. It really does, because I didn't break any glass mirrors, or I didn't run over a Chinese village, or I didn't walk under a ladder or something like that. I didn't do any of that. I swear to you, I really didn't. Not that I can remember, anyway. So anyway, that's the highlight of this week. Let's get into the show, shall we? Okay, we've got our book review this week. And in our book review this week, it comes from my friend Laura, and she's put out a book review that says Whiskey and Oak Leaves by Jamie Clavinger, published by Bella Books. Caught up in the fast-paced career as a paramedic, Meg has a little energy for full-time relationship, or so she tells herself. But on a faithful emergency call, Meg meets June, a single woman running a horse ranch in the California Sierra foothills. Having always wanted to learn how to ride, Meg soon finds herself on a horse under June's careful direction. The two become quick friends, and it isn't long before Meg is looking for more than just a friendship. But June has no interest in developing a deeper relationship with Meg. She is, after all, not the least bit interested in women. Or is she? Okay. Our movie review this week is The Secrets, and I'll have a link on my show notes, as always, for the book review and movie review. And this one comes from Wolf Video, and here's the description. Naomi, the brilliant and pious daughter of an ultra-Orthodox rabbi, finds herself at the crossroads of life's choices when her mother dies, and she's expected to immediately marry her father's prodigy. Distressed yet determined, she begs that her father allow her 1 year to study at a women's religious seminary in Safed, the birthplace of the Kabbalah, in order to prepare herself for the sacrifices she will make as a wife. Her father relents, and Naomi's life begins to take an unexpected turn. Devout but lively, Naomi and her new friend Michelle befriend a beautiful, mysterious older woman, Anouk, who is ill and living nearby, who may or may not be Jewish, and may have committed a crime of passion. Naomi devises a series of rituals which will somehow purify Anouk and purge her of her sins. But as these stretch the borders of Jewish law, they must be kept secret. Eventually, this journey into the forbidden leads to a growing attraction between the two girls, and more crossroads are faced. The Secret presents the complexities of a religious lifestyle in a vibrant environment of youth, rebellion, and desire. So, that's the movie review. And also, our song snippet this week was sent in by Vanessa, and it's Show You Love by Jars of Clay.
Initializing process. Oh, crap.
Okay, on the World Wide Web News, over at AUSXIP, Mary D's Xena website that has been on the net for Jiminy Christmas, I don't know how many years, since Adam was a baby back in 1996. Mary D has finally gotten her charity website up, the charity section where you can do auctions and bid on things for people and or books or anything that's out there that's being auctioned, whether it be for the Starlight Foundation or for Renee O'Connor's stuff or anything that's out there. And so she's finally got that up after the entire fiasco of having her site dumped when they had a hacker way back. Oh, God, it's been, about a year now when she had the hacker. So she's finally got that up and running. And, if anybody wants to take a look, go over. Make sure you register so you can get in there and bid on any books or anything that might, pictures or dinner tickets, I don't know, everything and anything that they put out there. I registered, and like I did before when I announced it on the show to go over there for a charity auction I did for one of the authors, Kim Pritikel, when she was having surgery, and I can't wait to get my book. I'm so excited. It's actually a signed, autographed book from Veda Foster, so I'm really excited about that. But, so go over to AUSXIP and register. It's the charity auction site. It'll go to the main page, and you can click on the charity site. Go in and register, and, it's a good thing. It's a worthwhile event. Then also over at Lucy and Renee HQ, make sure you check out their website. They've got an excellent forum as well. And gallery for pictures, games, all kinds of things. So that's Lucy and Renee HQ. And once again, I always have the links to these two or any websites I announce on the show in my show notes on the Blogspot. So there you go. All right, we continue on with A Matter of Pride by Melissa Good. And this is part 5. Gabrielle gazed idly across the small room, acknowledging the late afternoon somnolence as the warm air drifted over them and the sunlight gilded the floor, creeping past her feet. She was sprawled on Xena's pallet, with the warrior's head pillowed in her lap, and very content to merely let the moments pass while Xena slept. They discussed what she'd learned that morning and decided on a plan of action. Xena wasn't terribly happy in the plan, since it didn't have nearly enough action for her, but until her leg mended, they both agreed that a full out frontal assault on the Athenian council probably wasn't the best idea, so they decided to keep a low profile for a few days and spend their time finding out all the information they could. Xena had wanted to start tonight by venturing out and prowling the poorer sections of the city, but Gabrielle had seen the swelling growing under her knee and the pain crease Xena's forehead, and she convinced her to wait until morning. With a sigh, she shifted the arm she had laid across Xena's shoulders and cast an eye down towards the warrior's leg. She had it propped up on some folded blankets, but even from where she was, she could see the worsening bruise. Good sense would dictate that Xena simply stay off the darn thing for a few days, but the warrior seemed incapable of staying still for long unless Gabrielle dosed her with pain-killing herbs, and that held its own dangers. Xena hated using them. It took an extraordinary pain for her to even think about it, and she had explained to Gabrielle once that it sometimes became too easy to rely on them, and that was a dangerous and bad. Well, Gabrielle smoothed the hair back off Xena's forehead. That might be true, but she considered the risk worth it in this case, because the more the warrior insisted on moving around, the less chance her leg had at rest and heal. She studied the angular face. Maybe if she stayed with Xena and kept her company, it would be different. Gabrielle nodded a little to herself as she closed her eyes and leaned back. Yeah. That's what she'd do. She'd stay right there and tell Xena some of her favorite stories. Maybe make up some new poems, or maybe they'd just talk. Or maybe they'd... She wasn't even conscious for falling asleep.
Gab.
Her eyes opened back up, and she blinked, her brow furrowing as she tried to reconcile the change in the room's light
and her body's stiffness.
Ugh.
Gabrielle looked down to see Xena peacefully looking back at her, the warrior's hands folded over her stomach.
What?
Good morning. Gabrielle stared at the window, then back down at the warrior, acknowledging the stiffness in her back and the numb feeling in her legs.
Did we sleep all night?
She asked, incredulous.
Ow.
She bit her lip as she moved.
Son of a...
Xena rolled onto her side and let the bard stand up and stretch.
We sure did. She stifled a yawn. Pretty damn disgraceful, huh?
The bard rubbed her face, feeling very dazed.
Yeah.
She walked over to the replacement water basin she coaxed out of the innkeeper the day before and splashed handful of water over her head.
Wow.
She turned to find Xena sitting up in bed, having eased her splintered leg off the pallet and onto the floor.
How's it feel?
Xena examined the limb, touching the bruised skin with a cautious finger.
Swelling's down a little, she said. Doesn't hurt as much.
That's good.
Gabrielle wiped her face off and walked back over.
Ugh.
She sat down next to Xena on the pallet and rested her head in her hands.
How can I feel like a wagon rolled over me after sleeping that long?
Xena eyed her knee thoughtfully, then turned her head and regarded her partner.
Probably the way you were sleeping, she said. Sitting up, I mean.
One long hand patted the bard's thigh.
Thanks for the pillow, though.
Gabrielle smiled.
Anytime.
She leaned against Xena's shoulder.
Gods know. You've been mine often enough.
Her voice was warm with affection.
Well, let me go get some fresh water, and I'll make us some tea.
With a sigh, she got to her feet and retrieved the larger of the two water skins on the way to the door. Xena waited for it to close. Then she retrieved a crutch from under the pallet and hoisted herself to her feet, fitting the device under her arm and trying a few tentative steps.
Ugh,
it hurt, but unlike the day before, it was a manageable hurt that she could handle. She maneuvered over to the window and looked out, watching the early dawn light spill its way down the tiny, crooked street the inn was located on. She could already hear the city around them stirring, and the smell of humanity and beasts in close quarters was almost overwhelming. Xena leaned her arm on the sill and let her eyes follow a woodsman's cart, a small pony drawing it, struggling to pull the heavy vehicle up the street in the humid air. It stopped in front of the inn, and the animal stood, its sides heaving as the carter jumped down and strode towards the inn's door, his heavy boots booming on the wood planks outside. The pony's head turned, and its solemn brown eyes met Xena's for a brief instant. Xena turned and moved away from the window, going to her pack and opening the outside flap of it. She let her fingers curl around the contents of the pouch and drew it out, and then she hobbled back. A moment for her eyes to adjust to angles, then, with a flick of her wrist, she released a chakram into the air. With a keening whir, it sliced through one of the pony's traces, making the animal snort in alarm, then bounced off an iron-bound barrel of water standing nearby, and ricocheted back over the pony's back, cutting the other side. Feeling the light sting against his skin, the pony bolted, almost stumbling in shock when the wagon didn't follow him. Xena caught the chakram as it returned, and watched contentedly as the pony ran off down the road, trailing its reins behind it. A brief grin crossed her face as she let the chakram rest on the sill, its inset jewels winking at her in the early morning night. She heard the door open behind her, but her ears had identified the intruder long before they entered, and she remained where she was, enjoying the light breeze.
Anything interesting over there?
Gabrielle's voice drifted across the room. Over the faint clinks, as she set their small water pot on the tiny fire pit and restarted the fire.
Xena, is it just me?
The bard went on, not waiting for her answer.
Or are people in the big cities just more obnoxious?
Xena turned and regarded her.
More self-centered, maybe. Why?
Gabrielle rifled her fingers through her hair and leaned against the table.
There was the biggest jerk in the hall just now. What a mouth on him. Just nasty and cursing. Just because the innkeeper was taking her time about coming out, the fire would be.
Really?
Yeah. Did you know they're not allowed to cut their own wood?
Gabrielle went on, wandering over to join her at the window.
They have to buy it from this guy.
Maybe that explains his attitude, Xena remarked. Doesn't have to compete.
She turned and they both glanced out the window, as a bellow of rage was heard.
That him?
Sure is.
Gabrielle lifted herself up a little and peered out.
Oh, what happened?
Looks like his horse escaped.
The man held the traces in his hand and was shaking them in the innkeeper in rage, their cut ends very obvious. Gabrielle looked at them for a moment, then looked at the chakram on the sill. A grin appeared as she regarded Zina.
You are such a troublemaker.
A finely arched dark eyebrow lifted.
Got a problem with that?
Gabrielle rubbed her cheek along the skin of Zina's upper arm, then placed a kiss there.
No,
she replied.
That's one of my favorite things about you.
They both turned and watched a carter storm off down the road, leaving his cart of wood behind him. After a moment, the innkeeper's boys poked his head out, then scampered over and helped himself to several cords of wood, ducking back into the inn with them as a soft laugh traveled back to their spot at the window. Zina chuckled and churned, making her way back across the room to put the chakram back in its pouch. The crutch was becoming easier for her to use, as her body adjusted to the restriction, and she experimented with it, edging round the walls while Gabrielle pulled out clean clothes for them. Gabrielle was, she knew, itching to tell her to sit down and get off her leg. Zina appreciated the fact that the bard held the sentiments in, though, as Zina herself had done while Gabrielle was pregnant. Well, sort of. The warrior admitted wryly to herself.
Feels pretty good,
she announced. The bard's lips twitched, but she kept silent, mixing the herbs in their cups as she waited for the water to heat.
Not good enough to wander around the city, though,
Zina continued.
How about you go chase down your friends at the academy, and I'll find a spot inside the main room here and see what I can find out about the slaves.
Gabrielle stirred the tea and added a drizzle of honey to it. She handed Zina hers as the warrior took a seat by the repaired table and sat down across from her.
What makes you think you can find that out here?
She asked curiously, taking a sip.
Stands to reason. This place draws fighters, Zina replied.
Why?
It's,
Zina muffled a smile.
House of Fellowship.
She watched the pale brows knit.
Companions for hire?
What? This?
Gabrielle sputtered.
Zina, are you telling me we're staying in a...
House of ill repute?
Yes. The warrior's eyes twinkled.
No wonder they liked your face,
she remarked dryly.
Good thing you stayed out of the common room.
Gabrielle slapped her head and groaned.
Okay. I'm finding someplace else for us to stay, she sighed, before we get into real trouble.
There were many people on the road to Athens. They were all shapes and all sizes and represented villages and towns across the entire territory. They'd been traveling in some cases for days and were covered in dust and mostly overheated. They all turned, however, and watched as a small group trooped past, leading a wagon pulled by four sturdy roan horses. In the wagon rode a group of elders, with stern faces, dressed in good, sturdy cloth and leather. Driving the wagon was a bearded man and a dark-haired older woman. But none of that really attracted attention. What did attract it was the group of six Amazon warriors, marching along in front of the horses, and the wolf trotting along behind him. Ephany wiped her brow and gave her nearest neighbor a wry look.
Tell me again why we're doing this?
Eponin had been counting rocks in the road. Now she looked over at her friend and lover and scowled.
You made me lose count, she grumbled. We're doing it to help out Zina and Gabrielle.
Uh-huh.
Ephany glanced behind her. Just so I'm clear on all this, Athens levied a tax on Amphipolis. Our queen and the rocking, socking warrior princess decided it was a touch on the heavy side, so they came here to gripe about it.
Right.
Ephany moved closer. And since when did either of them need our help in kicking ass or taking names? The Amazon weapons master sighed.
Look, Eph, you know as well as I do they'd want us to come along to guard their family.
She peered over the youngest Amazon member, the slim blonde Kate, who currently had a familiar backpack strapped with her, with a living cargo.
Especially since Dory's here.
The Amazon regent eyed their bright-eyed, dark-haired charge, who was busy unraveling Kate's neat braids. Ephany had been a day late coming down from the mountains, and had caught up with them on the road. She'd been wondering how much ale her friends and the relations had consumed before this particular plan had been put together ever since.
Oh, yeah, right. Ebina looked furtively at her.
Well, we couldn't leave her, Eff. Come on now.
Ebony eyed her. Okay, her lover sighed. It was a choice. Either we took her with us, or stayed there and took care of her. Hazel eyes whitened.
We made the right choice, huh?
Ebony felt a shiver of just-escaped danger travel down her back. Naturally, she loved her friend's little daughter, who was, after all, an Amazon princess. But she also loved all her body parts and her personal dignity, and both tended to end up in tatters every time she had assumed responsibility for Dory, even for the shortest amount of time. Yeah. Eponin exhaled and went back to counting.
Give me the heat. Give me the rocks. Give me the crowds of Athens, she hummed. Just save me from the dangerous Dory.
Back!
Dory spoke up, having heard her name.
Poo-poo, come!
Eponin winced. Kate reached up and caught the baby's hands.
Did you run out of things to play then, Dory?
Distracted, Dory bounced up and down a little, making Kate's slim form waver noticeably.
Poo-poo!
Yes, Kate replied. We're going there ever so fast, so take it easy.
She glanced at the tall, glum-looking Amazon walking next to her.
Here, Pally, want to carry her for a bit?
Palladia stared at her.
No! You cracked? Or do you think I am?
She edged away from the baby's grasping hands.
That kid's more trouble than a handful of skunks.
Nonsense, Kate objected. She's a lovely little girl. You're just mad at her because she tricked you last night and stole your kicks. She glanced at Dory. Isn't that right, Dory?
Yes.
Dory agreed seriously.
Cat, go find Boo. Find Mama.
One track mind.
Palladia rolled her eyes.
You two must be related.
Oh, hush. Kate squared her shoulders and kept marching. She just wants her family. You can't hardly blame her for that, can you? Palladia kept her eyes on the road, kicking debris out of the way in a morose silence. After a moment, Kate moved closer and bumped her with an elbow. Sorry. The tall woman shrugged.
You ain't got none either, she remarked. Except them.
Palladia indicated the Amazons.
That's not true, Kate replied.
I've got you, don't I?
Palladia fell silent for a totally different reason, her skin taking on a deeper tone under the sunburn that covered most of her exposed body. Kate exhaled, enjoying the silence. They'd been traveling for a week, and it had been quite horrid at times. The elders from Amphipolis were ever so quarrelsome, and the Amazons they brought with them bickered all the time at each other. Really, it would have been much easier if she'd just snuck out with Pally, Dory, and Cyrene, but no one listened to you when you were a junior. And besides, they were all quite upset with Xena and Gabriella for leaving the way they did. Not that Kate blamed them. Certainly not, and after a week her opinion of her personal heroes had jumped up quite not some notches for doing just that. Clever they were. Kate cast a look over her shoulder to where Cyrene was admonishing two of the loudest complainers. But once Cyrene had decided to come along, and Johan, that meant Dory had to come along as well, and she wasn't about to let anything happen to her. She simply wasn't. It was just too important to both her idols. Even if Dory did tend to get into frightful messes, and did tug one about. Kate looked up at the sky, finding herself relieved to see the sun arcing towards the horizon. Ebony shaded her eyes against the slanting sun. Then she slowed up and waited for the dragon to roll up next to her.
Cyrene?
The innkeeper turned in her seat and glanced down.
Sorry, what?
The Amazon regent shifted a sword sheath on her back a little and exhaled.
Listen. We've done pretty good today. You think it's time to give it a rest?
Cyrene looked just behind her, where Jocelyn was arguing with his wife.
Oh, yeah,
Xena's mother agreed grimly.
We've got a town in mind, or we're going to have to settle for camping under some tree again.
Ah.
There's a nice spot near here,
Ebony skirted the question.
It's got a cave. Nice little waterfall, too.
Cyrene sighed.
I'm too damn old for this, she groused. All right, fine.
She turned.
We're stopping off the side of the road for the night.
What?
Jocelyn half stood.
Come on, Cy. We've got plenty of good time to travel left. At this date, we'll never get there.
That's right,
his wife agreed.
Let's wait till we get to the next town,
I don't want to sleep outside again.
The other elders doubted chimed in, comfortably seated in the padded wagon seat, while the rest of them marched in the sun. Effany and Cyrene exchanged looks, and the regent made a mental note to bow at Gabriel's feet for dealing with this and not becoming a homicidal maniac.
You know what? Effany leaned over the edge of the cart. We're stopping. If you want to go ahead and risk having bandits rob you blind, have at it. She waved a hand at the Amazon. Hold up. Make for the caves.
Jocelyn snorted.
But cheek!
Cyrene glared at him.
Well, I'm going with them. So if you want to drive this thing, get your ass up here.
She got down from the wagon and grabbed a large bag, which contained Dory's things.
I told you to stay in Amphipolis, you old goat.
She stormed off after the Amazons. Johan offered the reins to the Reeve.
Fine.
Joss threw his hands up. Well, stop.
Smart move.
Johan got down and started to lead the horses off the road.
I hope you don't mean for us to wash in that cold water again,
Joss's wife complained.
Why can't the Amazons ever find a hot spring if they're so clever?
Johan just shook his head and kept moving. It was shaping up to be a very long night. Xena entered the common room of the inn quietly, edging around the periphery of the room and taking a seat near the back window. She leaned her elbows on the chair arms and let her eyes slowly track around the space, taking in the occupants with a flickering glance. It was a good-sized room, used for more than just eating. On one side there was a fireplace, with low, comfortable chairs around it. The perimeter of the room had tables, but there was a cleared area in the center, whose worn wood planking suggested the space was used for activity of some kind. Dancing, Xena suspected, as she watched some of the servants enter. They were either young or a little older than you expected, marking the tavern as one whose patrons could not afford the best the paid flesh of Athens. Still, there were willowy boys and carefully dressed, comely girls, who quickly spread out across the room, greeting the scattering of patrons with ready smiles and warm looks. Xena found herself the target of one of them. She looked the stalker over as the boy approached.
Hi.
He was slim and fair, and had beautiful gray eyes.
Can I get you something?
He leaned casually on the table, exposing a tan, shapely hip through the slits in his toga.
A diaper?
Xena managed to keep the quip to herself.
Sure, she purred. What do you have to offer?
That got her an immediate, interested look.
Well, about anything you could ask for.
The boy smiled at her.
But we could start with some cold cider. And some of the fresh bread I can smell baking.
Sounds good. Xena's eyes twinkled. What's your name?
Micah.
He drew a finger down the surface of the table.
I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
He got up and headed for the small kitchen in the rear, with a gentle swagger that was both deliberate and eye-catching. Xena rested her elbow on the table and her chin on her fist, and chuckled softly to herself. Not a bad start. She let her eyes slowly move around the room again, sizing up her fellow patrons. Three or four were merchants, dressed in rugged broadcloth, and two of those were sitting together with their heads bent close. Making a deal, she mused. At a table behind the merchants, two men in half armor sat, nursing cups of ale despite the early hour. They had the look of hired mercenaries, and Xenic's experience noted their well-kept weapons, which were never far from their hands. On the other side of them, a large round table held a group of four men and two women, all six wearing remnants of the harness she had last seen in the gladiatorial arena. They seemed to know each other, and were having an animated discussion about the previous day's fights. All six were young and in very good condition, and their talk was loud and cocky. The mercenaries, Xena noticed, weren't impressed.
Here you go.
Micah had returned and set down a cup of cider and a trencher with a round, slightly steaming loaf balanced on its very center, with a lump of butter perched to one side.
Want me to slice it for you?
Sure. Xena nudged a chair for her with a good foot.
Sit down.
Micah looked quite pleased at being asked, and Xena had a feeling the pleasure was genuine. She waited for him to start to work on the loaf, then took a sip of her cider.
You from around here?
He glanced quickly at her, meeting her eyes for a brief second.
No.
Didn't think so, Xena chuckled. Thrace? Another quick, almost shy look.
How'd you know? You from there?
Amphipolis. He stopped cutting and cocked his head, looking at her full on now, with a curious, intrigued expression.
Really?
Xena nodded slyly.
Well, hi, neighbor.
Micah grinned.
What brings you up to the big city?
Business, Xena shrugged slightly. How about you? Micah put the carving knife down and picked up the spreader, carefully spreading the sweet herb butter on the slice of bread he'd cut off.
Well, I could tell you a sob story about how I was an orphan abandoned after my parents were killed by raiders, and I was sold by my fellow villagers into slavery for a couple of dinars.
But? Xena found herself intrigued by the boy. His eyes met hers again.
But the truth is, I didn't want to be a shepherd, so I ran away and ended up here.
He handed her the bread.
That's not so bad. The money's pretty good, and you get to meet some interesting people sometimes.
Micah smiled at her.
Like right now, for example.
Xena watched him as she took a bite of the bread and chewed it.
Yeah?
She said. What made you pick me?
I'm just a traveler from the backwoods with a bum leg.
His smile went from shy to dazzling.
Well, since you asked, he replied. Two reasons. One, you're beautiful. Not many people who come in this place are.
One dark eyebrow lifted slightly.
And two, there's something about you that's dangerous,
Micah added.
I like that.
Xena's other eyebrow lifted.
You do, huh?
She mused, wondering what to do with this precious youth, who probably didn't just realize how exactly dangerous his attempted conquest was. The boy smiled at her and licked his fingers. Gabriel dodged to one side to avoid crashing into two men coming the other direction, neither of whom seemed to see her or cared if they hit her or not. Both men were dressed in fine togas, one a light blue and the other a buttery yellow, with gold-trimmed hems and finely cured leather sandals.
"You're excused,"
the bard muttered as she turned and headed up a wider street, up towards the broader avenues she remembered the academy built on. The weather had cleared up nicely, and the sun was shining again, and she was glad she picked her lightest-colored sleeveless tunic to wear. It was close to the togas the men had been sporting in style, and she didn't feel too out of place as she joined the stream of bodies moving up the broad thoroughfare. As she walked, she listened to snippets of conversation going on around her. Everyone seemed to be excited about the games, and there was a lot of betting going on. Gabriel paused for a moment, stopping at a stand selling fruit and buying two apples, then continuing on her way, munching as she walked. Athens had definitely grown. The buildings on either side of the street seemed higher, some as much as three stories with staggered marble steps leading down to the road. On the other side of the lane ran muck channels, taking waste off down to the hill where, she assumed, spilled into the river. Surprisingly, the smell wasn't too bad, but Gabriel wondered if that was because it really wasn't, or if she was just getting used to it. Even Amphipolis made her nose wrinkle if they'd first come in from the road, and it had taken some time for her to adjust back to the smells of humanity after all the time with just her and Xena. Not, she admitted, stepping over a channel and continuing on. That they didn't have their own smells, the two of them, not to mention Argue. All creatures did, after all, and some were better than others. But Xena had taught her from the very start of their travels how to be as neat and clean in her personal matters as possible. It kept you from getting sick, for one thing, the warrior had told her, and Gabriel had seen that to be truth when they'd gone through towns who didn't keep to the same standards. Besides, she knew just how sharp her companion's sense of smell was, and the last thing she wanted to do, even from the first, was to give Xena excuses to get rid of her. A woman passed her, and the bard held her breath as a wave of perfume almost made her eyes water. She continued on, climbing up the sloping street towards the white buildings beyond. She let herself make casual eye contact, giving brief smiles in return when she got them, and absorbing the many different kinds of people there were packing the city. Finally, she reached the top of the slope and glancing around, then turned to her left and walked across the wide boulevard, edging between the carriages that moved ceaselessly along it. The academy was on the right-hand side, and she slowed as she approached the steps, pondering on the best course of attack. There were several young people sitting on the stone stairs, studying scrolls and laughing. Gabrielle doubted any of them would either recognize her or know who she was, so she felt comfortable in approaching them, cocking her ears to listen as their discussions traveled towards her.
"Did you see the toga he was wearing? It was so short. If he leaned over, you could see his..."
The girl speaking glanced up at Gabrielle's shadow fell over her, then returned to her conversation.
Oh, real end.
Ew,
her companion giggled.
How gross. Did you hear what Celeste said about him the other day? She's so wicked.
Excuse me, Gabrielle interrupted their chatter. Could you tell me where I could find Euripides? The girls glanced at each other, then the older one looked coyly up at her.
Who's asking?
A friend, Gabrielle replied with a smile. He invited me to watch his rehearsal.
Oh.
The girl cleared her throat. Then she carefully got up, arranging robes with elegant flick of her hands.
Okay. Well, first you go inside, then you take a left, go down the long corridor, then you take a right, and you'll be in the main hall. I'm sure he's probably in there, like he usually is, doing,
she paused delicately,
research.
Thanks, Gabrielle replied cordially, stepping around her and heading up the stairs, not fast enough to escape the whispers, however.
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah,
not his usual at all.
A snicker.
This one's got a backbone. And did you see those legs?
Gabrielle hummed to herself, blocking out the comments as she escaped into the building.
Okay, now let's hope I remember.
She ignored the girl's directions and took the first right-hand turn, down a winding corridor that smelled of marble dust and age. It was very quiet inside the building, and she didn't see anyone as she paced over the stone floor, ducking past two open doorways before she reached the end of the corridor and a heavily wooden door. She put her hand on the latch and pushed inward, feeling the weight of the door give way only grudgingly against her strength. As it opened, a gust of air puffed out, bringing with the scent of parchment with it. She entered and closed the door behind her, then leaned on it. The Library of Scrolls. Gabrielle knew she had a mission to accomplish, but she promised herself that she'd take just a moment when she got here to justify a purely personal, very egotistical need. She took a breath, then she walked slowly down the towering wooden shelves, all of them packed from top to bottom with heavy bound scrolls, carefully labeled and ordered in neat, precise hand. Off in the rear, she could hear movement, and she knew she wasn't alone, but she kept on walking until she found the spot she was looking for and stopped, facing the shelf square on and tilting her head back just a little to read the lettering bounding a shelf full of newer scrolls. Hers. She read the card with her name on it over and over again, not even noticing the facts that the handles of the scrolls were well worn, or that a number of them were missing neatly lettered cards in their places.
Well there, my good lady.
A quiet, sweet voice almost made her jump. Gabrielle turned, hastily wiping the back of her hand over her eyes.
Sorry, you startled me.
A stocky, bearded man in a sky-blue robe was standing there, his hands clasped over a substantial middle.
Athena's Grace, I didn't mean to. Would you like to check one of those out? I can help you.
Gabrielle glanced over her shoulder.
No, that's okay. I know those,
she murmured softly.
By heart.
As do so many others.
The man nodded and smiled.
Read them a number of times, have you?
The bard was silent for a moment. Then she met his gaze squarely.
No, I wrote them.
She paused as he blinked at her in evident shock.
I always knew they were here.
She looked at the shelf.
Wanted to see it.
He took a step forward, almost unconsciously.
You are Gabrielle?
Gabrielle nodded. His eyes went to the scrolls into her face.
Great gods,
he breathed.
Do the masters know you're here?
The bard cocked her head.
No, I don't think anyone does,
she replied.
Why?
His face creased into a totally unexpected smile.
Would you do me the honor of accompanying me, Bard Gabrielle?
Yes, courteously.
There are several introductions I would love to make of you.
He offered his arm.
And, by the way, it's a great honor to meet you myself. My name is Rudolph. I'm the master archivist here.
Gabrielle felt a little off balance, but in a nice way. She took the offered arm and smiled.
Lead on, Rudolph.
She wondered briefly if this wasn't going to stir up a lot of trouble. The attentive Micah had vanished briefly into the kitchen. Xena relaxed back in her chair and noted the room filling up. Most of the patrons were lower class, merchants and city workers, looking for a plate of the inn's food,
and some companionship out of the hot sun. She learned a bit, though. Mike had told her a little about the underbelly of the Athens society he moved through. He was a bound servant, having given over his freedom to the innkeeper in return for his keep and a percentage of the dinars he earned for his companionship. As such, he was on the top level of slaves. Since his indenture was for a finite term, he could buy himself free if he wished. He seemed no reason to want to yet, though, he said. The inn, while it was one of the dingier ones down the hill, lacked the sometimes cruel taste of the more fashionable ones, and so far he had a relatively easy time of it. A number of the other boys and girls here were in the same status, but others were true slaves, and the older types all were, fallen into a place where this provided at least a bed and food to eat. She'd casually asked about the slave market in the city. Micah had readily answered her, giving her names and places where she could bid on newly arrived, but also hinting that his contract might be for sale if she was really interested. Zena indulged herself for just a few minutes in imagining Gabrielle's reaction to her bringing home Micah. She almost snorted cider out of her nose when an image of the look on her partner's face materialized in her mind's eye, and she hastily put her cup down and wiped her lips as she continued to chuckle. "Look, hon, a babysitter. Think Dory'll like him?" She could just imagine the reaction. The outer door opened at that moment, and she glanced up when it slammed against the wall. For a moment, a tall, broad outline showed against the bright sunlight outside. Then the door was closed, and her vision adjusted, taking in the newcomer. Ah, one of the friends from the road. Zena's nostrils flared in reflex. The man who'd called her a peasant, as a matter of fact. Up close, he had an arrogant face that went with an attitude, as his eyes roamed around the room, then settled on the table next to hers. "Damn," Zena sighed. "Figures." She watched him cross the room, pushing people out of the way, until he reached the table and sat down, his eyes flickering over her, then away in dismissal. He had a tunic on this time, at least, but he settled his arms and flexed his muscles under like an eagle preening its feathers. "Now what?" Zena mused. "Was a purported participant of the games doing in here?" Her attention was distracted briefly by several musicians, who settled down on one side of the fire and started softly tuning their instruments. And by the time she turned back, the newcomer had claimed one of the servants and had her sitting on his lap. As she watched, he fondled her openly, then pulled her down to him and kissed her. "Amateur." The warrior rolled her eyes and shifted a little so that she was facing this cleared space in the center of the room, where, it appeared, there was going to be some kind of show. Sitting still so long, however, was starting to make her body a little antsy, and she decided to wander down to the slave trader's stall after whatever the entertainment was finished. The music started up just as Micah returned, sliding a plate of sliced meats and fruits in front of her, then settling down to her feet to watch. The first performer to enter the cleared area was a young girl, swathed in linen cloth. She started to dance to the music, revealing a sinuous grace and definite skill. After she worked her way around the square, she started peeling off the layers of cloth, keeping her motions slow and seductive. Zena rested her head against a chair back. The musical performers were better than she expected, and she felt herself relaxing a little as the music and the dancing molded. The dancer wasn't bad either. As she continued, she revealed a lithe, slender body with a pale golden tan and a jewel set right inside her navel. Zena was surprised, in fact, at the sophistication of it all, not what she expected in a joint like this. The girl made eye contact with her and smiled. Zena lifted an eyebrow and smiled back. Maybe she could get Gabrielle to join her for the evening performance, the warrior mused, as the dancer removed the last of her covering and changed her movements, sliding from sinuous to outright seductive, as she started playing to the interested crowd. A young boy in a loincloth joined her, running his hands over her body as she bent over his knee, grabbing the edge of his loincloth with her teeth. On second thought, Zena scratched her ear, a faint chuckle working its way out of her chest. Gabrielle might find it a little too much, the girl moaned. Yeah. It certainly was making the audience enthusiastic. Zena could hear the sounds of mingling body parts behind her. As she glanced around the room, the reason for the dancing was immediately apparent. The boys and girls were now doing a brisk business. Micah got up and perched on the arm of the chair she was sitting in, hitching up his tunic with a frankly unapologetic grin. Like the dancing? Oh boy. Zena folded her hands over her stomach and exhaled. Very pretty, she drawled as a second woman
slightly older and far more exotic, joined the duo on the floor. The newcomer was very tall and had cinnamon-colored skin that seemed to collect the light and burnish it with fire. She also had an animal-like grace, and the three of them started an intricate dance, which had hands going everywhere and showed off the boy's flexibility to a startling degree. It was almost impossible not to react. Xena knew herself to be a very sensual person, and she appreciated the beauty and raw sexual energy of the dancers. In her younger years, she had been no stranger to places like this, and those memories were stirring inside her, reminding her of a different time, a different place. Michael leaned casually closer, very gently brushing his leg against her arm. When she was a different person. Xena glanced down, acknowledging the fact that there hadn't been many times since she'd become intimate with Gabrielle that she'd even been tempted by anyone or anything else. Emotionally, she wasn't tempted now, but her body was definitely alive to the energy rolling around the room, and she knew better either to do something about it or get the Hades out of the place. Fortunately, her decision was made for her.
"You little bitch!"
her neighbor roared suddenly, breaking the spell of the dance and causing the magicians to falter. Xena turned to see the man backhand the young girl, sending her sprawling over the next table. Her body tensed, and she only just kept herself from intervening, reminding herself she was unarmed and she had a splinted leg to contend with.
"Hey!"
Nothing was wrong with her throat, though.
"What's the problem? Couldn't keep it up long enough?"
The man jerked around to stare at her, as nearby patrons erupted into laughter. The music petered down as one of the girls ran over to help her fallen comrade up.
"They say the bigger they are, the easier they fall,"
Xena went on in a taunting voice.
"Guess it's true."
She felt Michael laughing, his body shaking slightly, though he wasn't making any sound.
"Shut up!"
the man snarled.
"You have no idea who you're talking to."
"Likewise," Xena purred back, keeping her pose relaxed and her hands folded over her stomach. The innkeeper hurried over, washing his hands nervously as he approached the big man.
"What's wrong? They do not please you, my lord. Let me get someone else. Please, sit down."
"Get out of my way!"
The man shoved the innkeeper to the floor and stormed out of the inn, throwing a table to one side and slamming the door open.
"Hey!"
Xena called after him.
"Better buckle your tunic. You're exposing your weak points."
The crowd laughed again, two mercenaries nearest her giving Xena a grin, and a knowing nod. They each had a girl on their laps, and half their armor undone. The innkeeper turned and glared at her.
"I didn't need you to cause trouble for me," he lowered his voice. "That's Jason the Bull. He's a very powerful man."
Micah shifted a little forward. "Jonas," he spoke softly, causing the man to lean closer. "This is Xena Vimphiplis. If half the stories I've heard of her are true, Jason is lucky he left with his parts intact." Xena was impressed. So the kid had known what fire he was playing with. Her estimation of him went up a few notches. The innkeeper stared at him, then looked at her.
"Is that true?"
he hissed, mindful of the interested crowd now paying close attention to him. Xena nodded. The man studied for a long moment. Then he shook his head and turned towards the dancers.
"What are you staring at? I pay you to dance! Start the music!"
He waited for the sound to resume, then gave Xena one last look before he scurried off towards the back of the room. Well, Xena now found herself the subject of quite a bit of attention. She sighed and leaned back.
"Teach me to try and stay low-key."
She glanced up at Micah.
"Thanks for the intro. Didn't know I had my name tattooed on my neck."
Micah grinned. "You don't," he admitted.
"I guessed."
Xena's eyebrow rose.
"You're a fighter."
He cheekily picked up one of Xena's hands and examined it, turning it over and running a finger across her calloused palm.
"You wield a sword, and you have for a long time."
He paused.
"You're tall, and you have dark hair, and beautiful blue eyes, and an attitude ripe from Hades."
Xena chuckled.
"So I took a chance."
Maka's voice took on a reflected tone.
"And I was right. I'm glad you told off that brainless ox. He's been here before, and he..."
The boy paused.
"He's never satisfied, and he doesn't care if he hurts people."
Xena studied his profile, his cheeks covered in a soft down, not even long enough to shave yet.
"You one of those people?" she asked quietly.
He didn't answer for a moment, then he shrugged and gave her a smile.
occupational hazard. I'm used to it.
They regarded each other in silence. Then Zina looked across the room.
I need to move around a little, she stated, drawing a crutch from under the table. Nice day for a walk.
He got to his feet as she did.
Would you like someone to walk with you?
Micah asked.
To open doors if you need it.
Zena's lips twitched. Sure, she nodded towards the exit. Lead on. She followed him through the crowd, aware of the eyes fastened her as they left the music behind them and entered the bustle of Athens outside. Gabriel looked from one withered face to another in the semicircular seated round her.
You want me to what?
She asked in a slightly incredulous tone.
I didn't come here to compete in your contest.
We know that.
The oldest of the women held up a hand.
Believe me, I can imagine this is a shock to you.
The bard got up from a chair and paced around it, then leaned her hands on his back and studied the elders.
Let me see if I understand this, she said. You decided to hold this competition, to raise money for the academy, because you figured you'd get a great turnout because of the games.
Right,
the woman nodded.
Then Celesta showed up and bullied her way in.
Another nod.
Now, if she wins, she'll take over the academy and throw you all out. Is that it?
Something like that, yes.
An older man agreed.
We were not, how shall I say it, very complimentary to her initial efforts here.
Miss Green Eyes regarded him.
You told her she wasn't any good.
Not exactly.
The woman stood also.
We suggested ways for her to make her works better.
Ah.
Gabrielle put her boot up on the chair and leaned on her knee.
So, if she's not that good, why are you worried? Won't the audience just not vote for her?
It's not that simple,
the woman said.
Celeste is very intelligent and very well connected here in the city.
She paced as she spoke, waving her hand.
Her family is very, very rich, and she spared no expense in buying the best talent, the best musicians, and...
Here, the woman frowned.
It's not like we have our usual audience here in Athens. Many of the visitors are from the provinces, and they will be tremendously impressed by all the grandeur she has planned.
Uh-huh,
Gabriel murmured.
So, even if her show isn't the best, you think she'll win because it'll be big and loud?
Exactly,
the woman agreed.
It's not a matter of,
she hesitated,
of sophistication or quality, you see.
So, you have a rich kid from the city who's pouring dinars galore into this production, so she can imprint the country bumpkins and win your contest, so she can take over the academy and turn it into her own private playhouse and control all the arts in Athens,
Gabriel concluded.
Is that it?
Exactly,
the woman let out a sigh. And then the men all nodded and muttered.
Very good summation, Gabrielle.
The bar waited a beat for them to settle.
So you're coming to an itinerant shepherd's kid from the provinces to get you out of this mess?
She had to smile.
Pretty wild, don't you think?
They all looked at each other. Then the older man scratched his beard.
Irony is one of the muses, no?
He murmured.
Look, Gabrielle sighed. I'm flattered to be asked. Honest. These people have been preparing for moons. I talked to Euripides yesterday. He's been rehearsing half a year for this.
One of the men, a tall man with a beautiful white beard, crossed over to her, his withered face quiet and very serious.
My name is Lunius. I am the senior bard here.
Gabriel straightened as he approached, and he reached out and put a hand on her shoulder.
Gabriel, let me tell you something.
He paused, then went on.
I am an old man.
Gabrielle's lips twitched, but she remained silent, fascinated by the deep resonance in his tone.
I've seen it all. Especially, I've seen it all here.
The man went on with a faint smile.
Every year, the plays get bigger and bigger. Everyone tries to outdo the other. With music, with dancing, with exploding firepots. Good Zeus! Last year we had someone actually construct a Trojan horse and had it dragged on stage.
The bard chuckled a little in response.
Must have been quite a sight.
Damn thing collapsed and nearly took out half the stage and a quarter of the audience.
The man shook his head in bemusement.
the look up into her eyes.
But all that means so little. There is no heart to it, you see. Only spectacle.
He put his other hand on her shoulder.
Your stories need none of that, Gabrielle. They reach out and touch the soul.
Gabrielle had no idea of what she should say to that. She studied his face with quiet intensity.
What if your audience really wants all the frills?
Elenia shrugged a little.
Then it will be so. At least they will have a choice.
Would it hurt? Gabrielle felt a little incredulous thrill at the thought of getting up in front of all those people. But what would Xena think about the request? The bard thought about that for a moment. Xena would... Gabrielle took a breath. Smirk. That's what Xena would do. She knew it. Her partner would like the idea of watching up there, in spite of the complication it would add to the already complex mission. However...
All right,
Gabrielle quietly replied.
I'll do it.
The man smiled broadly at her.
But I have two conditions, the bard went on. One, that you keep this under wraps until it's time for me to go up there. I've got stuff I have to do, and I can't have this getting in the way.
Surely.
And if I do win,
Gabrielle smiled slightly,
I'm not going to stay here and keep your title.
If anything, they all only looked profoundly relieved on hearing that, and Gabrielle realized that the competition had been, for them, only a sham. They expected to be able to control the winner, who would have become, she could see, a figurehead, and they'd gotten hoisted in their own mast.
Excellent. We're all completely in agreement.
Elenia sighed.
Thank you, Gabrielle.
He glanced around as the other elders approached with warm words of thanks.
It's time for some refreshments. Gabrielle, please join us.
Sure.
Gabrielle went along with the guiding hands as they headed down a long, polished corridor towards the brightness of an internal solarium.
Actually, I was coming here to look for my friend. Maybe you can help me find him.
If we can, surely.
Elenia smiled.
What is his name?
Homer.
Gabrielle watched for the reactions and got them, ranging from startled to embarrassed.
I heard he left here. Can you tell me what happened?
There was an awkward silence as they kept walking. Then Elenia sighed.
Let's get some wine first.
He guided her through a cut stone door in a glorious open space.
The story is a long one.
Well, Gabrielle reasoned, at least her visit was going to be productive. She found herself settled under some soft pillows as servants scurried around, pouring out a rich, fruity wine that tickled her nostrils. She only hoped Xena's day was going as well as hers was. It just felt too good to get outside. Xena paused briefly on the corner and let the light breeze blow over her, giving her body a chance to settle before she decided what direction to head off in. It wasn't comfortable to walk, really, but she figured if she took it slow and tried to avoid climbing tall hills, she should be okay. And, conveniently, the harbor was downslope from where they were. Xena planned her route, then started on her way, her body adjusting to the awkward strain of the crutch with rather more grace and ease than she expected.
So,
Micah paced alongside her.
How did you hurt your leg? Some great adventure?
Xena repressed a smile. Nope. I got kicked by a horse. She edged around a big hole in the walk.
Really?
Yep. The warrior was glad to trade the heated tension of the inn for the sweat of her current struggle.
Tried to help some jackass get a wagon out of the mud. She sighed. Teach me to get between a horse and his bitter instincts.
Micah was quiet for a few steps.
That must have hurt a lot.
Xena shrugged. Not really, she said. Just annoying. They joined a small stream of people heading down the road. Xena found her neighbors to be roughly clad working men and women, some stragglers that dragged along belongings, or limped as she did. Her dress didn't stand out, but she was aware of the eyes on her nonetheless. Feeling her nape-hairs prickle, she steered over to a small, rude wine stand and dug into her belt pouch, letting the crowd flow by her. Micah edged to one side, his expression a little puzzled.
I don't...
Xena braced herself and put a hand on his shoulder, pushing him towards the stand and out of the crowd's reach. She felt a jostling against her back, but didn't budge, even when the pressure increased and she could feel hands reaching out her with feather lightness. She grabbed the set of fingers and closed her fist, clamping down with all strength in her hand. A soft, shocked gasp reached her ears, along with a faint sound of crunching and the sensation of cracking bone under her fingers.
She released her grip and turned her head, seeing a small form go stumbling off, slipping through the crowd without looking back. Xena watched the space for a moment, then turned her head back around and tossed a coin at the merchant.
2 cups,
she growled. Michael licked his lips a little.
Pickpocket?
Cool blue eyes regarded him.
Friends of yours?
Michael paused in shock, staring at her.
No.
He shook his head.
I just figured.
Some of his confident veneer had worn off, as though out here, outside his familiar world of the inn, he's more the youth his looks proclaimed him. Xena relented and handed him the 2nd cup she purchased. She backed away from the stall and leaned against a tree trunk the stand was perched near, sipping the pungent, fruity liquid as she watched the now thinning crowd move past.
Let's go.
She said she drained the cup and left it on the stand. Micah hurriedly did the same and joined her.
At your services, mistress.
He replied softly, missing the wry, raised eyebrow, stared directly at him.
Are you sure you want to go down to the docks? Maybe a cart would be easier.
A cart would definitely be easier. Xena plugged stubbornly on, ignoring the ache in her shoulders from the awkward motion. She'd never been one to let physical handicaps get the best of her, and she wasn't going to pick now to start. The streets were getting narrower and more crooked, and the fitful breeze that puffed by her brought a very strong, almost acrid sense of the river to her nose. She heard the sounds of a ship nearby as well, and she headed in that direction, letting the creaks and soft clanks of rigging guide her. The path downward was getting steeper, and she knew the return journey wouldn't be comfortable, but her instincts were drawing her forward, and she followed them without question.
Mistress.
Xena, the warrior replied. Since you know my name, use it. Micah moved up next to her.
A ship has just come in. I saw the guards running down towards it. It's not a good time to be down there.
Why? Xena eyed him.
Things happen,
Micah stated, matter-of-factly.
It's not a good time.
Xena considered the information.
They don't like witnesses, she hazarded.
Micah shrugged.
All the more reason.
The warrior edged around a cart left upturned in the road, its broken shafts blocking the way. Micah jumped over the cart and caught up to her.
Do you always just travel around looking for trouble?
No, Xena replied. I usually bring it with me, but Gabrielle's busy today, so I'll just have to see what I can find.
She glanced down at a side street, spotting several rough-looking men lounging against the wall. Chains dripped over their shoulders.
Slavery's legal. What's the problem?
Micah had been staring at her. Now he just exhaled and shook his head a little.
Sure, it's legal,
he replied quietly.
But you know how it is up on the hill.
He indicated back on the way they came.
All noble and all that. I guess the big shots in the white robes don't like to think about what actually makes Athens run.
That made sense. Xena rounded a corner at the end of the street and paused, as a breeze coming off the water blew her hair back and dried the sweat coating her skin. Before her, the waterfront spread in both directions, the gray-green water stretching out from the harbor to the far-seen horizon. The docks were crawling with activity, centered around the dock area, just south of where she was standing. A large 3-masted ship was being pulled in, men scrambling around the docks and shouting as a large vessel neared the wharf. Ropes creaked and the ship's tarred timbers rasped against the stone, its loose sails flapping in the refreshing wind that brought a stench of old fish and unwatched humanity with it. Xena edged into a small alcove in front of an empty hut, where a short wall provided a perch for her to settle on. She was mostly in the shadows here, far enough from the docks to avoid attention, yet close enough for her to absorb every detail of what was going on. As the ship was secured with thick woven ropes, men started to gather around it, some pulling handcarts, some obviously dockside workers, some just idly standing by. The group of men with chains sauntered over, leaning against one of the thick upright pylons, and trading crude jokes whose subject was obvious to Xena's ears even at the distance. It felt good to get off her leg, Xena had to admit, as she exhaled, and felt the ache slowly ease from her shoulders. She let her chin rest on the cross piece of her crutch, and allowed her eyes to wander over the scene, aware of Micah settling at her back, as far into the shadows as he could press himself. The ship was finally lashed into place, and the landing planks put down. The first man up onto the planks was a tall, bearded fellow, with a richly cut sash and high black boots, his bare chest glistening in the hot sun. The captain, Xena answered, sparing a brief moment of nostalgia, when she herself had mastered the ship not too different from this one.
Odd bunch, sailors,
Micah commented softly.
They look so much to the gods.
She hadn't, Xena reflected. Maybe that's why none of her voyages had ever done her any good.
Dangerous way of life, she said. A lot of things can go wrong out there, and it's just you in the water. No place to hide.
It had been a stormy night at sea, on the long voyage back from Britannia. Xena had gone topside and helped the crew batten the ship down for the storm when they returned to the small chamber they had been assigned to. A chamber suddenly far, far too small to hold the gulf that had opened between her and Gabrielle. The bard had been silent and very withdrawn since they'd left the island, spending most of her time gazing out over the water, looking back the way they'd come. Wrapped in her own silent thoughts, as she was when Xena re-entered their cabin, finding her near the porthole, leaning against the wooden ship's wall and gazing out into the darkness, or perhaps gazing in at it. There had been so very few times in her life when Xena had felt so completely helpless as she had in that moment. She had no power to change the recent past, no power to comfort her friend, no power to make what Gabrielle was now carrying any better, any lighter. All she could do was hurt for her, for Gabrielle and for her, and for what they'd lost. So she'd taken a spot as far away from the bard as she could get, settling against the inside wall of the cabin, and wrapping her arms around an upraised knee, listening to the lash of the rain against the boat and the low, close rumble of thunder. She rested her chin against her arm and watched Gabrielle out of the corner of her peripheral vision. In the reflection from the porthole, she could see the lines of exhaustion on the bard's face and the dark circle under her eyes, and wondered when the last time Gabrielle slept had been. Not any of the nights in recent memory, she realized, having sensed the bard tossing and turning ceaselessly, refusing her comfort with quiet, whispered finality. Oh gods, that had hurt. Xena felt the storm of emotion rising in her, and the magnitude of loss. How had she let this all go so wrong? But, with a sigh, the warrior had straightened, turning her head as Gabrielle shifted and started to stand up, freezing in mid-motion and biting her lip to hold back a cry.
Gabrielle!
Xena had asked, the concern bubbling out from her deep reflex nothing but death could have stifled. A breath.
Yeah.
Gabrielle had straightened slowly and turned to face her, obviously in some pain.
You're hurting.
The look Gabrielle had given her had been one of such dark irony it had made Xena flinch. But she pushed that all down and gotten up, walking over to Gabrielle and peering closely at her.
I've got something that might help.
Gabrielle hadn't even looked at her. She'd just shaken her head faintly.
I don't think anything will.
Might help you sleep, at least, Xena had replied very quietly.
Worth a try, isn't it?
For a moment she thought Gabrielle was going to refuse. Then the bard had finally lifted her head and met Xena's eyes, and nodded in silent agreement. Xena had gone to her bags and taken out her healer's kit, removing the herbs she needed and mixing them in a cup filled with wine. She slowly mixed the contents, then brought it to Gabrielle and put it in her hands. There. Very slowly, Gabrielle lifted the cup and drank from it, swallowing in steady gulps until it was drained dry. Then she handed it back, curling her hands very briefly around Xena's as the warrior took the metal goblet. Then her eyes had fluttered. She stumbled a little, as the drugs took hold faster than Xena had anticipated. The warrior had reached out and steadied her, but Gabrielle's knees had buckled, and she would have fallen if the warrior hadn't simply tossed the cup to one side and caught her, cradling her gently as she eased them both over to the rude bunk the room had afforded. By the time Xena had settled to her knees on the pallet, Gabrielle's hands were twined in the loose shirt the warrior was wearing, and her head was resting against Xena's chest. It had just been so much easier to simply leave things as they were. Xena clasped backs against the inner wall and pulled Gabrielle to her, letting the bard's body slump against hers as the herbs took her out completely. She never dreamed it would hurt as much as it did, feeling that old, once familiar warmth cuddled against her, and knowing if Gabrielle was awake and aware, the bard would push her away. It broke her, and she put her arms around Gabrielle and hugged her, feeling the tears well up helplessly as she sat there in the semi-darkness,
as the storm raged around them. In that one moment, she realized all she'd lost.
"I'm sorry," she whispered. "I'm sorry, Gabrielle. I'm sorry for everything."
Tears had rolled down her face.
"Sorry we met. Sorry I let you follow me. Sorry I didn't take you back home and leave you in a safe place."
She put her cheek down on the fair head, knowing she'd probably never get a chance to do it again.
"Gods, I wish I were dead. I would have rather died 1,000 times than to have had this happen to us."
Darkness had settled over her.
"I guess I deserved it,"
she whispered in quiet despair.
"But you didn't."
Her shoulders had slumped, and she'd just given in to her grief, just wishing for an end to the pain gripping her heart. She'd woken with the pale, wan light of a new day pouring through the porthole, spilling across the weathered boards of the cabin, and across the splayed legs and Gabrielle's still cuddling body. And she opened her eyes, only to look down and find Gabrielle looking gravely back at her, to have Gabrielle lift a hand and touch her cheek, to find an old friend behind those green eyes, despite the shadows and the pain etched across them.
"Thanks,"
Gabrielle had whispered hoarsely.
"Hang in there, Zena. We'll make it."
If there had been any tears left in her, she would have shed them then. As it was, she could only be grateful that the darkness had lifted an inch, and that was enough. For the moment.
"Zena."
The warrior turned ahead. "Yes?" Micah drew his hand back.
"Are you all right? You looked a bit out of it."
"I'm fine," Zena told him. "I was just reviewing some information." She turned her head back to watch the ship, which was now being unloaded. She had a sudden urge to get up and head off to find Gabrielle, but she managed to stifle it and concentrated on watching the group of slave wranglers nest standing around the gangplank, chains at the ready. First thing first.
"So you see, Gabrielle."
Elena's paused as a woman across from him seemed to freeze, pausing in her motion and gazing off at the distance.
"Gabrielle?"
A shiver passed through the bard's slim form, but the green eyes lifted to meet his.
"Sorry,"
Gabrielle murmured, taking a deep breath. The sudden jolt of something had hit her in the guts. She wasn't sure if it was just a very sweet wine, or the bard felt sweat start to break out on her skin, under her tunic. She put her cup down. It was a very odd, almost tickling sensation, not quite unpleasant.
"I'm not used to strong drink."
"Ah."
Elenis smiled at her.
"Of course. Bellies. Cut our guest wine with some mortar, will you?"
Very young man stepped lightly around the circle and knelt at Gabrielle's side, taking a cup and gracefully pouring the crystal water into its depths, then taking a slim stir and mixing it. He handed it back to the bard with a sweet smile.
"Thanks."
Gabrielle took a sip, finding the drink easier to swallow. It didn't seem to help her body suddenly tingling, however.
"So, you're telling me that Homer came to you and told you he had proof that Celeste was intimidating the other bards, and you..."
"Well..."
The older woman had the grace to look embarrassed.
"It would not be an unreasonable thing for a competitor to claim, you see. Homer was Celeste's biggest rival. They fought constantly."
"But..."
Gabrielle took a breath as another wave of tingling crept over her skin, lifting the soft fine hairs on her arms and making a wish. She blinked. Making her wish Zena was there, or more precisely, making her wish that she and the warrior were together. Somewhere there weren't an entire room of watching Athenian bards. That was very odd. And it wasn't that she didn't often think of Zena and get, Gabrielle nibbled the inside of her lip. But not usually when she was sitting in an important meeting. With a frown, she forced herself to concentrate.
"Didn't you think Homer might have a point? You seem like you don't think too highly of Celesta."
"Oh, we discussed it,"
Elena sighed.
"The thing is, Homer was always seeing unfairness, and he was never shy about threatening to leave us over it. You remember, Gabrielle, don't you?"
Gabrielle had to admit she did remember exactly that.
"I know he was very sensitive, but I thought it was mostly his father's pressure that caused that. He didn't want to fail in front of him."
"True,"
the old woman sighed.
"At any rate, we tried to play down suspicions and he accused us of being purchased by Celeste's money and power. And then he left.
She shrugged.
It's a very sad tale, but that's true. It's not out of our realm of what we expected from him.
That bothered Gabrielle, not only because she remembered Homer fondly, but because she suspected he might have turned out to be a very good bard. She also held, close to her heart, a sense of kinship to Homer, and to think he simply walked out in a fit of pique and left the academy just didn't sit well with her.
Did you try to change his mind?
He left before we could.
Alanis broke in smoothly.
We sent word to his home, but the messages won't be back yet for several days.
Uh-huh.
Gabrielle remembered Atreus's word.
His family didn't contact you?
No.
Alanis shook his head gravely. Gabrielle caught his gaze and looked at him, judging the word. She decided he, at least, believed what he was saying. Now, the older woman, Gabrielle noted her shifting eyes and the long, elegant fingers plucking at her robe head. The older woman knew something.
Selina, didn't you think it was odd that Homer would just walk out like that? I know he was upset, but unless he changed a lot, I'm sure he still believed in his work.
Selina steepled her fingers and rested them against her lips.
Strange. You should ask that, Gabrielle.
Strange. I bet.
Gabrielle merely waited, relieved that the itchy, heated feeling seemed to be abating a little. The older woman got up and went to the sideboard, bypassing the attentive slaves and pouring a cup of water for herself.
I spoke with Homer just before he left,
she said.
He was upset. Yes, that was very true.
Her eyes darted to Alanis's back, then drifted to Gabrielle's face.
But he told me something very interesting, and it had to do with you.
Me?
Gabrielle asked in a surprised tone.
Yes.
Selina walked back over and sat down into the soft cushions.
He told me that he was fed up with the politics of the academy, and the only reason he was sticking out with it was because of something he'd read in one of your scrolls.
She turned the cup in her hands, studying the surface of the water as though trying to divine something from it.
Something about how the sweetness of the journey's end was in direct proportion to the bitterness of the road you take to earn it.
A smile appeared on Gabrielle's face.
In my life, that's been very true, she replied quietly. It's like climbing a mountain. When you're doing it, it seems like the hardest thing in the world. But once you get on top and you see the view, it's worth the work.
They didn't understand, really, Gabrielle knew. Though Alanis was nodding, she knew these people facing her hadn't gone through a quarter of the trials she had in her short lifetime.
Well, yes,
Selina agreed.
I suppose that's what he meant. So that's why I was surprised to find him gone the next day. It would seem he changed his mind very quickly.
You know how flighty he'd been lately?
Another man interjected.
Doesn't mean anything, Selina. I told you that after it happened.
And we all know how much you disliked him, Anas,
Selina sniped.
So naturally you thought that. Now, Selina,
Alanis held up a head.
I know you like the boy.
Okay.
Gabrielle got gracefully to her feet and set her cup down. That's enough of this.
Well, I've got a lot of things to do today. Thanks for the information and the refreshments.
It occurred to her suddenly that she'd become less tolerant of that kind of thing lately, and she wondered if her often temptress partner wasn't rubbing off on her just a little.
I'll be back in touch when we've got our tax situation straightened out.
They hastily got to their feet to tend to their farewells to her.
Remember, the competition will come soon, Gabrielle,
Alanis reminded her anxiously.
The winner will be selected on the feast day of Aphrodite, midway through the games.
Don't worry,
Gabrielle smiled at him.
I'll be there.
She took his proffered arm and gripped it, then stopped neatly around the piles of pillows and left the room, cocking an ear to catch the rising buzz of speech behind her as she left. With a tiny shake of her head, she found her way out towards the street and almost gained her objective when a large body suddenly blocked her way. Instinct took over and she fell back a step, her boots moving out shoulder-width, with her hands coming up in an automatic defensive posture as a body came over her center of balance.
Well, well,
Celeste's low drawl sounded.
What have we here, if it isn't Euripides' friend?
She studied Gabrielle with lazy, intent eyes.
Jumpy little thing, aren't you?
Feeling a touch embarrassed, Gabrielle straightened up and let her hands fall to her sides.
Sorry, You startled me,
she explained, returning the steady stare with one of her own.
How's your rehearsal coming along?
The tall woman leaned against the doorway, blocking it casually.
Why don't you come see for yourself?
Celesta asked.
I seem to recall inviting you. Not many people stand me up.
Ah.
Gabrielle nibbled the inside of her lip.
That's right, you did, didn't you? She said. Well, you looked pretty busy yesterday. I didn't think you meant right that moment.
I guess you judged me wrong then.
Celesta smiled.
I'm very much an instant gratification kind of girl. So why don't you join me now? You know, Yuri never did say what your name was. Now did he, before you dashed off and abandoned us?
Gabrielle forced a body posture to relax.
I had a friend to look after, she said,
then had to grab for the door sill as a sudden wave of grief washed over her. Celesta's eyebrow lifted.
Don't get all dramatic on me now.
She stood over and reached for Gabrielle.
Come here.
Gabrielle stepped back, feeling a heart racing in her chest that had a sudden tight band around it.
No, I'm fine.
She drew her breath.
Excuse me. I've got something I need to take care of.
She started past Celesta.
Whoa now, hold on.
Celesta grabbed her.
Not so fast, country cousin. Hey!
Gabrielle swiveled and clamped her hand down on the grip holding her, shoving the bigger woman back and tearing herself free.
Excuse me,
she repeated, ducking past and gaining the door, then trotting down the steps into the bright sunlight. She paused at the bottom of them, glancing up and down the street, then picked a direction and broke into a run, driven by the churning in her guts. Bugs were fun. Dory crawled underneath some thick leaves, hot in pursuit of a pretty bug, a red one with dots. She clambered over a big root and stumbled down on the other side, then slapped a hand over the frankly crawling bug and secured it.
Gotcha!
She lifted a hand close to her face and peered cautiously between her fingers. She heard someone calling her name, but it wasn't Boo or Mama, so it didn't count. She put the bug down and watched it crawl, then picked it back up again. She didn't put it in her mouth. Legs tickled and she didn't like that. She heard a noise and then made her put the bug down and crawl off to investigate. It was too low for her to walk, but crawling was good too, especially since it was mud. Mud gushed. She liked that. Mama didn't like that, but Boo did. Dory knew. Boo made believe she didn't, but Dory knew better. She wished Boo and Mama were here now. Grandma was okay, but she missed Mama's voice and the way Boo smelled. She missed flying. Dory scowled and looked for a noise. She saw a green rope moving away and climbed after it, reaching out hand and grabbing the end of the rope as it disappeared. It moved. Dory's eyes widened and she pulled back, feeling the rope squiggle and squirm inside her fingers.
Back!
She yanked her hand back, and the rope came all the way loose, dropping atop of her legs. Someone called her name, but it wasn't Boo or Mama, so it didn't count. The rope was now squiggling on top of her, and she let it go, then grabbed the front end with the eyes, pulling it closer for her to look at.
Amina.
The rope's mouth opened up, and it stung its tongue out at her, like Mama did. Dory stung her tongue back out. Mama always laughed when she did that, but the rope didn't. It writhed and wrapped around her hand. Dory scowled at it. Then she heard another noise and looked around, surprised to see another something looking bad at her.
Amina!
She pointed at it. It had a small, nasty face and a skinny body, and it growled at her. Dory growled back. Guff never liked that.
Go!
She pointed again, imperiously. The Aminul got mad at her and showed his teeth. That wasn't good. Dory didn't like that because when Guff did that, he was going to bite. Guff never bit her, but Guff bit other things, and Dory knew what he looked like when he did. The Aminul came closer, showing its teeth again. Dory wondered what to do. She could get up and run away. She could stay. She could fight with the Aminul. The Aminul growled and came closer. What would Boo do? Dory got to her feet and ran at the Aminul, yelling at the top of her voice, waving the rope in her other hand. The Aminul squeaked and ran, dashing off into the bushes and disappearing real fast. That was good, Dory giggled. She wished Boo were here because she knew Boo would hug her.
Dory!
Dory turned around. Poo-Poo was here.
There was Aminul,
she told her.
It was mad.
I'm mad, you little...
Poo-Poo was wet and covered in mud, so Dory didn't understand what her problem was.
Get over here! Give me that! What do you have in your hand? No!
Dory watched Poo-Poo fall over, making funny faces and throwing the rope around in her hands. She was funny. She giggled and looked around to see what else she could find. To be continued.
Well, that concludes episode 83 of Xena and Ubers, and that is the first half of part 5 of A Matter of Pride by Melissa Good. Please make sure you check out her website, which I will have a link on my show notes for. As always, or actually in the last few shows, I've been asking for some feedback into what everyone would think would be great for the 100th episode of XNU. So if you could send me some suggestions, whether you think a competition, whether it should be a specific story, or some questions, or something like that, any ideas, send me an email so that I could sort through them now. Because as you can tell, we're getting to closer and closer to the 100th episode. And if I need to get some questions and a contest set up, I'd like to have some time to do that. So, as usual, if you have any future stories, as you know, I do have my story to read after this, but I'm going to probably do an Uber in-between story to get away from Xena for a while, just for one episode, you know, one show, like I said, is it's Xena and Ubers, and then I'll go and be reading my story and then continue on with any other suggestions, stories that are out there. But in the meanwhile, send me some song suggestions, any future story suggestions, because I still do have to get the author's approval form, and any announcements or dedications or just a shout out to say hi at xena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next episode, everyone, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye.